Morning, welcome to our meeting. 9 a.m. on May 5th, 2026, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PVD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, our Secretary. Commissioner Julieta Altamano Crosby has another official engagement and will be joining us late this morning. John Harlow, our CEO General Manager. Colin Willenbrock, our Chief Operating Legal Officer. Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Dolfrio. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices at this time. I am going to say the flag salute, and you're welcome to join me. Pledge allegiance to the flag. Pledge copies of today's agenda are located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. Commissioner, is there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda?
I have none.
Comments from the public is item two on today's agenda. That's when the board will hear comments that will be limited to 3 minutes. Persons shall be recognized to speak from friend cards located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. If joining by entrance, please click raise hand or dial *9 if joining by phone. Calling you to speak at the appropriate time. If you're calling in by phone, you will need to dial *6 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state your name, and indicate where you're from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioner and not the audience. If you have documents or other materials to enter into the record, please hand them to the deputy clerk who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So our first item is recognition declarations. 1A, Team of the Month, our Water AMI deployment team. I'll introduce Karen Latimer, who will introduce the Water AMI deployment team. Oh, you're not.
My name is Jeff Kallstrom. I'm the Chief Water Operations Officer. I want to just jump in before Karen gives detailed introduction and just say a couple things. We have a statement that we have at the PUD that we bet on ourselves. And when you have a team like this, it becomes easy to do and becomes the obvious answer. The team is very strong, very talented. They recognize that we are a customer-focused utility, and so they're focused on that. And then they take pride in the system and ownership in the system. This is our system as members of the community and as a water utility. And then just the one thing that I wanted to say that I'm the most proud of about this team is they have a ton of interactions with customers, whether it's phone calls, whether it's out in the field. So this project resulted in a lot of customer interaction, and they handled it. I mean, the complaints that we got were so small compared to the level of effort that it's tremendous. And then that's what I think is the success of the water utility and the success of this team that allows them to be so good at what they do and to take a project so big and move it forward in the way that they did. All right, can I jump on up?
Would you like the team to come up now or after?
Do you have something you want to
do?
Why don't you say your talk, and then we'll have everyone come up and we'll take pictures and
okay.
That works.
Good morning, Commission. I'm Karen Latimer. I'm the Water Utility Superintendent. And I'm very proud today to recognize the Water AMI deployment team for our Team of the Month. Before I get started on that, I want to recognize all the other teams in the district that were part of that process, because it's definitely not something the Water Utility did alone. We had a lot of IT teams, AMI teams that were set up, corporate communications, accounting, a lot of people that I won't recognize individually, but they are definitely behind this whole process and a part of the recognition today. There's a lot of work that went into the process. There's planning, preparation, routing, scheduling, purchasing, warehousing, troubleshooting, programming, dispatching, logistics, account creation. Lots and lots of work. A lot of it happened for a couple of years before we actually got working on deployment. I want to share a couple of statistics before I share some things about the team. So all in all, we installed 23,903 water meters. That took 30,752 labor hours. That included technical support, not just in the field deploying. Right off the bat, we detected 4,292 leaks on customer services, so about 18%. So we got the benefit right away. And with our expert warehousing and help from Lisa, we diverted over 300,000 pounds of materials from waste stream. We were able to recycle those, and it generated $250,000 in revenue to us. So, with that, this team, they didn't just participate in the district's meter deployment initiative, they pioneered it. We were out testing it, getting it going, started before electric, which meant we got to check on a lot of things and help figure out a lot of things. They served as the pilot group for the deployment process and software implementation. And because they were first, they also faced a lot of the earliest and toughest challenges: process testing, software glitches, ongoing corrections, even repeated data loss that forced manual entry and temporary workarounds that sometimes increased their workload. What really stands out is how they responded. Instead of being discouraged, they leaned into the district's continuous improvement process. They prepared for months, building robust processes, coordinating routes and schedules, and ensuring thorough training. And once deployment began in August of 23, they kept monitoring progress, refining procedures, and optimizing the program while maintaining momentum through those setbacks. Just as importantly, as our Chief Water Operations Officer mentioned, they delivered outstanding service to our customers. They had to engage directly with every single water customer, arranged to have their water shut off, temporary service disruption. And quite often, we had to adjust people's landscape or cut into their driveways, and people are very passionate about those places. And so that took a lot of handholding, working directly with those customers. We worked with corporate communications. They helped us develop a wonderful web page and custom handouts to give to our customers so they could understand the why and the how before we arrived at their property. Throughout all that, this team showed tact, empathy, and a true commitment to making sure customers felt heard and supported. And what I'm most impressed with is how this team worked together. They had a positive can-do attitude, strong initiative, proactive problem-solving, and a culture that stayed collaborative and engaging. And they kept it fun. They used internal goals like beating the deployment numbers for the day before or the person that held the record, so they could keep morale high and strive for excellence. It was a big job, and everybody stepped up. They did get the work done 6 months early and 12% under budget. And for that, Water AMI deployment team, I thank you for your resilience, your professionalism, and the way you supported each other while delivering results for the district and our customers. Congratulations. Come on up.
Yep, we're going up here.
Up here.
Commissioner Olson, are you gonna settle up?
Yes,
I'm coming.
Yeah,
Commission, well, yeah, we're gonna take a picture and then. Commissioner, do you have some words to?
Hi. God. Those in the audience, you may not know, but the utility, along with many of the utilities across the country, had issues with supply chain issues. Did that affect the water meters as much as it did the electric?
In the beginning, yes.
In the beginning, yeah. So, I mean, we're talking many, many months of delays. For a variety of reasons. And hearing that you got done months earlier than when the project had anticipated, why would that? It's really cool. And I'm not going to ask a question. I want somebody to share perhaps something that was very memorable Well, in the installation work, and it has to be prime time.
Pressure.
Being on my yeah, so I'm going to ask. I'm going to see somebody has to, and if you don't, I'll point my fingers.
Remember, they're winning an award.
You don't go out to that many meters.
We could pick on. There are three people that did 61% of the install. So one of the two that are here might get some.
What are the three? Over there.
He installed the most.
He installed the most. All right, you get to say something.
Most memorable. So I got a lot of pretty entertaining stories, but which one are you?
Gotta be clean.
What one were you talking about?
It's any.
The last one when you had 60 people walk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was pretty memorable. Okay, I can't mess anything up here. I've done enough of these that, well, I just had a lot of eyes on me when I was.
The last one.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of. You opened it up and something crawled out or something like that. Okay. Sorry.
I just want to say, first of all, what a phenomenal team to get these meters installed so quickly under budget. But I want to back up and say, when we first, the commission first looked at doing advanced meters, because we had, one of, as you well know, we're one of the last utilities, especially on the electric side, to do it in the state. Country
behind them.
You know, the business case was very clear for the electric side. The business case for the water side wasn't as clear. So we had those conversations about whether it makes sense. And of course, the commission thought it made sense that customers, we do both for customers. And so it's phenomenal to hear that we've helped 4,000 customers identify leaks they didn't know they had and to reduce their bill. We won't call it any names. So that's phenomenal work. And the second thing that most people don't know is around the nation, almost all these meters are always installed by contract crews. The company that sells the meter ranges for the contractor. And so that was another early decision that we made that, boy, what a great opportunity to have PUD staff, because most people don't necessarily even interact with PUD employees unless they happen to catch their meter reader walking through the neighborhood or person. And so to have our employees reach out and work with every customer as we do this to their house. And it's a great opportunity. So I really appreciate all the work you do. And I know it's not always easy. There's probably some stories there that were pretty challenging situations. So
let me down, guys.
We appreciate that.
I know it's an award. But...
I know everyone's getting a certificate and a picture out in the hallway. And so just a big round of applause. Thank you, everybody. Please offer somebody the microphone if they want to say something. I'm sort of guessing from Commissioner Olson's offer. We don't want to send you down. Okay. Thank you, guys.
We'll say something.
Okay, please do.
Yeah. So I've worked here. I came in on the time limited and got full time at the end of the year. So I've been here just under a year. I was at Skagit PUD before, and I've worked at the City of Everett too. And all the places I've worked, I've never worked with like a better group of people that work together, are confident, and even, you know, any task that comes, it's precise, thoughtful, and just I've never worked with a better group.
That's good to hear. That's very good to hear.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
And that's why we try as best we can to do the work in house.
Yeah.
For this and many of the other, you know, on the electric side of the house that we do. Because we know we've got top-notch people.
And you beat the electric deployment.
Emily, so yeah, but now
that's got to feel good.
The electric deployment.
I know. But
more
it is.
Issues.
Had to get that.
Supply chain. Well, I wasn't going to do it. I was going to be very nice to the girl.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Let everyone who wants to leave first. Answer that wants to enter first. All right. Next is item two, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public? Each first and last name for the record. Start off with, we've got some sign up cards. The first I have here is Harry Anvik. Mr. Anvik, did I butcher your last name?
No, you got it just right.
Okay, please come to the podium and you'll have 3 minutes, sir.
I have a slight disadvantage. My last name begins with an A, and that was me first. And I really came here to become educated on what I'm hearing about a data center that's going in up in Arlington, just to the north of us here. Power is more and more important every day. Basically, what keeps us alive. And so that really focuses our attention when we hear that large usage is coming into the area. I think the progress is great. I think there's efficient ways to do it, and I think there's not so efficient ways to do it. And we really need to look out for efficiency as well, because the cost of the energy is something that not everybody can afford anymore. In that light, I guess I just appreciate more information to keep us all aware. And you guys have been doing a fantastic job. We've got power. I could turn the lights on and they come on. Let's see if we can keep it that way. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next, we have Mary O'Farrell. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. What's going to happen with this microphone? Bring my paper in. I'm Mary O'Farrell from Camano Island, and I've lived out there for about 28 years. Very pleased with the services of your assigned employees on many occasions, including a telephone pole that got knocked down right in my front yard by a drunk driver. They were on the spot the next day and had it reinstalled, which is just wonderful. So I appreciate the opportunity to comment today, and I'm here to voice my concern about the four potential large load systems that we heard about 2 weeks ago. We're trying to move into our public utility district. And as a speaker from your meeting 2 weeks ago mentioned, the snowpack is only 50 to 53% of normal. And the whole area is under this drought threat. And so I'm concerned that the summer water supply and generating capacity, especially in August and September, will be dire. One of your other speakers spoke to the large load and the high prices in September because of the drought and the heat and the air conditioning. And with the trends for global warming, this is only increasing. NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, has identified that the Pacific Northwest has a high risk for rolling blackouts during extreme weather starting this year. 2026 started to believe that we might be following California with the blackouts. Washington Energy is projecting a 10% yearly rate increase for Western Washington utilities. And our rate increase this year was only 2.5%, which we'll be dreaming about if this comes to fruition, to have 10% or more rate increases. The VPAs was mentioned as a source for most of your energy. And their original mandate dates back to Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal of the 1930s, which promoted rural electrification, particularly for farms, at the same cost as urban rates. So because rural areas are harder to serve, it was important that the playing field be leveled so that poor customers could get serviced. No one could imagine any one customer gobbling up an unknown quantity of megawatts of power 80 years ago. So it's, but the intention was there to serve the public. The Bonneville Power Act was signed into law in August 20th of 1937, stipulating that federal dams would, quote, give preference and priority in the use of electrical energy to public bodies and cooperatives.
Mayor, sorry to interrupt. That's 3 minutes, but I'll give you about 30 seconds to.
Okay, I'll wrap up. The data centers, hyperscale data centers, will destabilize scarce water, power, land, and other well-known impacts while employing few people after construction. Now, this is not the economic vitality our communities want or need. The principle of economic vitality is there's trade-offs of limited resources versus unlimited wants. Please don't take the risk of letting people who want unlimited wants take priority of the citizens' residents of our district. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good research on the history of the industry, and I thank you for that.
Next, we have Julie Winchell. Julie.
Hi, I'm Julie Winchell. I live just northwest of Arlington, and there are a lot of trees in my neighborhood, so I'm a big fan of your linemen after the wind blows, because we often lose our power because of that. I'm here today to talk to you about the possibility of locating a data center in anywhere in Snohomish County, but specifically in the Arlington area. I have many concerns about data centers, like the noise pollution and what they do with the warmed water, which river they think they're going to dump it into, and the fact that they employ very few people once they're up and under operation. But I know that that's probably not anything you can address, but there are two concerns that the PUD can address. First, approving contracts to supply enormous amounts of water to any business seems risky at the least, and at the worst, really foolhardy in today's environment, given climate change. With water becoming scarcer and scarcer, Snohomish County has been in a drought emergency now for 4 years, so it's looking like it's a trend, not a fluke. And this is not the time to inflict any more stress on the area's lakes, rivers, and aquifers by allowing a data center to use enormous amounts of water. Your own mission statement says that the PUD delivers affordable water and power in a, quote, safe, environmentally sustainable, and reliable manner. And in my mind, supplying water to a data center is not environmentally sustainable. Secondly, data centers, of course, use lots of electricity. There was a report done by a consulting firm, E3, that said there would be a power reliability gap this year in the Pacific Northwest. And since we get most of our power from the BPA, I'm assuming that's us, I'm guessing that the conservation measures alone aren't going to affect the predicted 3.2% increase in power demand because of the population growth of our area, because of the increased use of air conditioning as our climate warms, more electrical vehicles being charged, and industrial users like data centers. On your website, you say you've long prioritized providing affordable carbon-free power to our communities while being sensitive to the natural environment. So agreeing to a data center anywhere in this county doesn't seem like it's really in alignment with your stated priorities. On the PUD's climate change policy webpage, it states that you will continue meeting customer growth through conservation and a diverse mix of renewable technologies, including but not limited to wind, tidal, solar, biomass, and geothermal. But can you really supply a data set with those sources of electricity is the question. So in conclusion, this is not the time, and Snohomish County, with its rapidly growing population, is not the place to start locating data centers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, Robin Carmichael. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Robin Carmichael. I'm a utility customer who has lived in the same house for almost 50 years in Stanwood. I'm asking for a true opt-out from the installation of any smart meter on my property. My request is based on the fact that the meter broadcast communication being turned off does not turn off the electromagnetic frequency in any way. I'm electromagnetic sensitive and suffer from tinnitus, which began when numerous 5G installations went up in my neighborhood, to include an installation on the Stanwood Water Tower less than 1 mile from my home. I have seen 3 otolaryngologists and have not gotten any relief from the constant ear ringing. It is aggravated by EMF, which I do my best to minimize my exposure. My home was built in 1916, and I'm unsure if my wiring will support the load of a smart meter. We do not and never will install any smart appliances in our home. We do not use a microwave oven. We've always tried to be conscientious about our electricity usage. We have to have disable some of the smart devices on our car as they affect me in a negative way. We shut off our phones, our internet when not in use, especially at night. I'm hoping that House Bill 1336 passes so that myself and others may have the privilege of not being hit with radiation 24/7. The current opt-out that is being offered isn't a true opt-out, and in some cases can make things worse. I have an EMF testing unit to help minimize my exposure. People who have implanted pacemakers are warned not to be too close to smart meters. My husband has a pacemaker. I've been reading my own electric meter for over a year now without fail. Please make the opt-out a true opt-out and don't force a smart meter on my home. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we have Dean.
Someone left this book here. I'll get it later.
Dean, is it Tugas?
Tugas, you're Clark. Right.
Got it. Good morning.
Good morning. My comments are much the same as Robin, we just heard from, about the need for a true opt-out for customers who are sensitive to EMF radiation. I understand from the handouts that the new meters, the smart meters, are considered safe based upon certain studies, but there are many studies that go beyond the parameters of the electrical industry studies that point to endocrine disruption, neurological disruption, and other biological disruption based upon EMF exposure. So I believe that it would be, I would like to see the PUD adopt a true opt-out to allow those of us who are sensitive to EMF radiation to keep our EMF neutral electromechanical meters until more research has been done on this critical health issue.
Make a few comments. We have one online, Joe Beck. You're still muted, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, good morning.
Hi, good morning. For the record, I live at 2203 172nd Street Northeast. That's in Marysville. My testimony is surrounding data centers. I'm concerned most specifically about a cost increase because I live on a fixed income for all ratepayers within the within Snohomish County. I'm also concerned about the usage of water for these data centers throughout Snohomish County. If you can address both those concerns, will there be an increase in cost once these data centers, if they are sited, how much of an increase may there be? And also, the cost to the environment in terms of the usage of water. Can you address those two concerns, please?
Thank you for your comments, sir. Are there any other comments? Raise your hands. Thank you very much. Seeing none, we'll move on to item three of our consent agenda, 3A, approval of minutes for the special meeting, April 16, 2026, the regular meeting of April 21st, 2026, and the special meeting of April 25th, 2026. 3B, the award for best service contract amendment. And 3C, consideration of certification, slash ratification, and approval. I'll call for
approval. Do
you have any questions or comments, Commissioner?
I have none.
I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next, item four, our CEO General Manager briefing and study session. This item is for the board and the CEO General Manager to discuss issues among ourselves and DPD staff. Well, good morning, John Harlow.
Good morning, Commissioners. A couple of good items to go over today. First up is our media update and Aaron Sweeney. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Commissioners. Aaron Sweeney, Manager of Communications and Marketing. Here today for the media coverage report. So we wanted to talk, obviously, about the Energy Block Party, which was weekends ago. I know Kelly Stickney will be coming and talking more about food community engagement, giving more numbers, specifically about turnout, things like that. But I really wanted to shine a light on our team, the communications team, and all the work that went into signage, went into advertising the event, went into media coverage of the event, social media, just everywhere, kind of just telling customers about it. I just think that our team did a great job of marketing the event. I think we saw that in the turnout numbers and just the way that the event, I think, came off really well.
And the sun was out.
Yeah, that didn't hurt. The sun was nice, for sure. We had a nice story in the Herald about our drought declaration. We had the reporter talk to Andrew McDonnell from Natural Resources, and Christina Hart also helped with the interview. The message really is that with large reservoirs like Spada Lake and being a drinking water resource, we have to pay really close attention as we go into the summer and, you know, make adjustments where we can. As things get more extreme with weather, we may have to make difficult decisions, but right now it looks like going into the summer will be fine. The Camino Station substation and all the efforts up in North County, the ribbon cutting that went on in early April was covered by a couple of outlets, including the Stanley Camino News. I don't get to do this very often anymore. There's a print, an actual print of her story. Great photo from Stanley Camino News, so I wanted to bring that and show that off a little bit. But great turnout. Great to have Congressman Clark on there. I thought it was a nice, really nice day. And again, some of them. So we're lucky with weather lately. And then I just wanted to mention a couple of safety awards that we won from the NWPA and APPA. Just really nice kind of a showcase of all the efforts that we do around safety. It's a lot of effort just to, you know, kind of put in for these awards and put all that together. So kudos to all the folks who do that. And just kudos to all the employees who work on safety every day. And that's a great photo. Really a great photo.
And when you replace it with water, then a lot.
Definitely. Some quick hits, also in media coverage lately. We've been talking a lot about trees. Applications are now open for tree power. We also had our Arbor Day event, which was really nice and covered locally by the press. And Snohomish Tribune did a story on some tree removal that we worked really closely with Snohomish Library on. BPA leadership, John Harlow contributed a quote to a story in the RTO Insider talking about kind of what we're looking for in the next BPA administrator which is now down to the two candidates. And then energy saving tips. I wanted to highlight this. We've been really over the early part of this year and kind of late last year focusing a lot on this. This goes back to a JD Power score that talks about how does your utility help you with low and no cost tips for conservation. We'd actually dipped pretty low on this, 20.5. So we made a concerted effort to really talk more about this in the wire, talk about it in other newsletters. Like we had a nice promotion of it in the City of Arlington newsletter. And that score did come up in the last JD Power score. We're actually above West Mid size now. So just wanted to point that out, that the effort there is really working.
Yeah, so much work goes into that.
It does.
It's good.
Yeah. And then finally, just highlighting what's in the wire, talking wildfires, making sure our customers know that we are being very proactive in this space. Also a good opportunity to talk about Snow Smart again. Other things in this issue, we've got Eric Schneider as Employee of the Month, Safety Spotlight on meter access, and then our awesome water team with the conservation tip on water and the community energy run, which will be out of our water operation shop in October. That's it for me. Questions? Comments?
No, I have none.
I just want to say, first, the block party was really not best. Hats off to figured out 4 years ago that Earth Day was the perfect day. I'm going to be amazed at thinking back in my childhood and the idea of my parents taking me utility on a Saturday morning
for fun.
It's great, and it's a great opportunity for people to understand more about how the utility works. So.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be fair to say it's probably a legacy of our former boss, Julie Cunningham.
Yes.
She came up with the idea to attach Earth Day and a fun event. And I totally agree with you. It's a great way to interface with customers. And I also want to give a shout out to kind of the CI effort around it in terms of continual improvement. You know, every year we try to get better with how we're doing that event. And I think this year we saw a lot of those kind of changes put in place.
Parachute drop.
Parachute drop was great.
And that was great. Everybody was so excited about it.
Yeah, until the wind picked up.
Well, they were blowing to the waters.
It did go a little far afield, with the wind for sure.
No, it was. Do we have any estimate on the attendance? Yeah.
I do not know. Lisa, do we have an estimate?
About 5,000.
Around 5,000, I think.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to figure out because the whole 4 hours over that time.
That's right.
It going, yeah. But it was pretty crowded for that whole 4 hours.
Well, yeah, but for free,
yeah,
you know, and all kinds of goodies,
yeah.
And lots of babies and young children that were having a great time, yeah.
And the Powering Tomorrow presentation, I think that was 100.
Oh, yeah,
this room was packed most of the day, so yeah, it was a really great event.
And we handed out toys to children.
You got them all on your ship.
We're
at 10
minutes. Oh,
I think they took
for me. Well, sorry about that. I'm going to shout out to Susie Overspeed. So I listen to podcasts when I'm off the road.
Yeah.
NPR Shortwave is one of the ones I routinely listen to.
Yeah.
And so it's fun to listen to her talk about the question of whether to cut down a tree to put up solar or not. You're thinking, I hope they kind of mention community solar. It came out of the story.
That was kind of a funny opportunity that just came out of the blue, I think, because the customer who asked the question was from our survey.
Yeah.
And Susie jumped right up and raised her hand, and it was great.
Yeah,
it was great.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron. And I'd just like to pile on to Aaron's comments around huge thank you to communication group and all the heavy lifting they had to do to pull that off, and then the amount of folks that were actively engaged throughout the day across the district was really impressive. And it's so cool to see our folks interacting with customers in the communities. It's so prideful of what we do and how we do it. It's super cool experience to see. All right, next up is our, what we committed to bring back to the board on the timing of development of our economic vitality principles, and Jeff Bishop. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning, John. Morning, Commissioners. Jeff Bishop, Chief Financial Officer.
This is a follow-up to the request that came at our last board meeting, where the commissioners, as part of the strategic plan update on Objective 3.2, Angela did a presentation to Joe Johnson, and their request from the board was to come back with a set of principles on economic vitality. Well, not the approach, but a timeline. So today,
charge the money.
We're done. I mean, today's goal is to talk about the approach and the timeline, bring forward the economic principles for board adoption, and then ultimately make sure that we've got alignment in terms of approach and timeline. We'll go through that here in just a moment. No specific action requested for today. This is for informational purposes only. So as we look at the timeline, we're at 5-5. That's where we're at today, talking about the approach and timeline. As we move forward to 6-23 in June, that would be bringing forward a set of principles for the commission to assess, ensure that we're capturing everything that you need to, you know, as we think about a number of the questions that came up today, ensure that those are captured appropriately in those principles, talking about commission values, public power, water responsibilities, affordability, reliability, certainty and fairness, defensible actions, and making sure that we've got those all in place as we move forward as a utility to address economic vitality. One of those pieces would also be large load as well. We work through that, get feedback from the board on 6-23, and then hopefully incorporate that and bring it back for approval on July 7th for final consideration and adoption. With that, I wanted to know in terms of the timeline and approach, if that meets your requirements, and see if there's any questions that you have.
I have no question that it does meet the timing, the schedule, because then we're moving into the budget, developing our budget for 2027.
Yes.
So this is the underpinning of the decisions that we need to make as John was spoiling the budget development.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of comments. It's been really much on it to talk about today, but I appreciate you guys getting right on this. We brought this up at our last commission meeting for the members of the public here that we needed to look at the board adopting a principle around large loads, new large loads. And so you guys getting right on this. But we're gonna have a lot to say in the January
3rd meeting. You bet, yep, and Angela would maybe be here in DC, but she's been doing the boatload of work on it. So that's good on her.
You know, one of the things I'd like to understand better if Commissioner Olson is in agreement is I'd like to understand a little bit more about data centers, because I know there's, I mean, if you have an iPhone, you're connected to a data center. So I'd like to, I mean, I know the data center run the gamut, cloud storage, cloud computing, massive AI calculation for computation. So is it possible just to have a slide just to understand?
Sure. I think
and maybe even what we already have in the region, because I'm sure we must have some large storage facilities in our county.
Yeah, we'll work to get that pulled together for you. Okay. The layperson's reliance on data centers.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, appreciate that request.
Thank you. It can help understand the context. It's,
yeah, great ask. Excellent.
Yep.
All right, next up is an update on Washington Clean People Survey. Angela Patterson and Lisa Martino.
Well, hello. Good morning. How are you? Good to see you. Yes, thank you. I'm Shelley Patterson, Senior Manager of Strategic Partnerships, and I'm here today with Lisa Martino, Program Manager, and we're going to provide you an update on the Washington Clean Fuels Program and the work that we're doing here to support it. So here we go. I'm going to remember to click today. All right. So this is an informational presentation. We're not asking anything of you today, but we are preparing you for a resolution that will be presented May 26th. So the last time we met was July of 2025, and that's when we introduced the Clean Fuels Standard program and shared that we would return with more action on the customer program that we're implementing to support that. So today I'll offer a quick refresher of the legislation and highlight the major components of the Ecologies Program guidelines. Then I'll turn it over to Lisa, and she can share how we transferred those requirements into a customer program designed to award funds that advance transportation electrification and deliver meaningful benefits to our community. So just a quick review. The Clean Fuels Program was enacted in May of 2021 and updated in 2025. And the Clean Fuels Program aims to reduce greenhouse gas emissions through a clean fuel standard, carbon intensity. And I'm going to go off script because you've got bullets here, but I want you to really understand what this program is and what it means to us. The Clean Fuels Program is administered by the Department of Ecology. And fuel providers, which we are a fuel provider, we fuel all of the EVs in our territory. So we earn credit for our clean fuels, and those credits are assigned to us. If we did not participate in the program, those credits still exist and could go to an OEM. They could go to a third-party aggregator without the same requirements. So the credits that come to us, we monetize. We turn those into dollars, and then we have requirements on how to spend those dollars. It was a big decision to participate. Well, on one hand, no, because it's a benefit to our community, and we want to take those challenges. It was a big decision because it was totally outside of what our processes are. Ecology had guidelines that we had to meet as far as accounting and, you know, buying or selling credits and all of the things that it takes to monetize. And the lift, that's another thing I want to stress, is the number of people within the district that took to make this happen. And I want to say that not one person said, we can't do this. Everybody said, what do we need to do? How do we make it happen? So just a quick review on the Ecologies Guidelines. It's the 50-30 plan. And to put it easily, I like to say it's the 50% is do the most good. 30% is prioritize communities most affected. And the 20% is flexible transportation. So that's where we have the most flexibility, but the bigger spends are in those categories. Electric vehicles, EV charging, community engagement. It's really how can we support transportation electrification within our territory. And a quick review of who else is participating. So clearly all of the utilities throughout the state are recognizing the benefit of this. You'll also see that only a few of us have actually launched programs, and that is because really of the complexity of it. But we chose to take a leap of faith and trust our people and bet on our people, and we successfully did launch that program, which you're going to hear more about from Lisa. So with that, questions?
It's a lovely slide.
Questions, Commissioner?
The program is being offered right now. Any program.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
To distribute the funds. So, yeah. Well, we want to. We do want those funds. Any other questions before we go to the program itself? No? Okay. All right, Lisa.
Hello, I am again Lisa DiMartino. I'm a program manager with Strategic Partnerships, and I work for Shelley, and I'm the manager of the Electric Pathways for Transportation program. So let's see. So the program is meant to fund electric vehicles, electric vehicle infrastructure, which can be charging. It can be utility upgrades to support that charging. It can be education and outreach. And it is available to non-residential PUD customers within for projects within the service territory. The program was launched in November of last year with the intent that it would be a soft launch with minimal outreach. However, the program closed March 31st and we received 20 applications where we thought we would be receiving five or six. So this was good news in terms of demand, also good news in terms of learning. So the idea was to learn through this pilot. We have 20 applications, and there's a lot of diversity in those applications in terms of geographically across the territory, in terms of the types of customers that applied, in terms of the types of projects that they're requesting funding for. So we feel like we have a really good start, a really good foundation for the next grant cycle. We are expecting to award for this grant cycle $2 to $3 million. That funding is 100%, just to underscore, funded by Ecology. And the way Shelley alluded to the ecology structure and the credit sales, the way this works, this is a real example of the ecology structure, is that the PUD receives credits on a biennial basis. Because we applied and opted into the program in 2023, we've been receiving these credits since then. So there's a chart here that kind of exemplifies what our current ledger looks like. So the dark green is credits accumulating over time, and the light green is credit sales. So those credit sales are made to fuel producers in Washington State that need to meet the compliance to operate in the state. And we work really closely with a power supply team to monetize those credits. So this graph is showing credits over time, sales that we just started in 2025, and then the yellow line represents sort of the ledger balance. So that's going to change over time as we are issued more credits and more sales happen. Our sales, our strategy around the credit sales is to fund the current grant cycle, as well as to prepare for the next grant cycle. And again, we work with really closely with power supply team, and we're looking at things like, when is the grant window opening? What do we expect demand to be? And the power supply team is looking at the price of the credits and the volumes requested. And so we work together to determine when exactly those sales happen. And please jump in if there's any questions. I forgot to see that.
Well, I'm sure not.
What was that?
No, please go on.
Okay. So I want to review. So that's kind of a summary of where we've been. So in terms of next steps, on May 26th, we will be seeking a resolution to authorize the execution of the Electric Pathways for Transportation grants on a recurring basis up to $199,000 with no commission approval required. Shelley will have signing authority for amounts above the threshold. I'm sorry, Shelley will have signing authority for amounts above the threshold. I don't know why I got confused about that. I meant to just read it. And may self-delegate that authority as needed. And then all grants will be based on Ecology's guidance, which is flexible. All grants agreements will be subject to legal review, and any amounts above the threshold, there we go, of $199,000 would come back to the commission for approval. And then other next steps, so we received 20 grant applications. We're in the process of reviewing all those grants right now. We will be having interviews with customers, and then by the end of June, we'll be issuing grant awards. By the end of September, we will be have signed agreements with customers, and the initial payment will be distributed by that time. In the meantime, we'll be continuing credit sales, and we are looking forward to the next grant offering. The earliest that would be is end of this year, probably latest it would be is early next year. And this round, since we have this opportunity to learn so much this round, we are going to be doing more outreach and more targeted outreach for the next rounds. And at the same time, just starting to think about what else can we do with these clean fuel funds, different kind of different customers, potentially in different kinds of programs. And then finally, just a huge shout out to all the teams that helped launch this program and that are helping with it ongoing. It's really a big effort from the PUD, so I just want to officially thank folks.
Thank you for including that. Very helpful. I mean, talk about a little bit of an understanding of when you show, you know, the cross-pollination or, you know, we're not a vertical utility. Thanks, everybody. Good check in. Well, it's in the presentation, but it's not going back to my school days. Title I school, that's probably in the elementary and secondary education act, the federal act. What are Title I schools?
Federal designation.
Yeah, it's a federal designation.
I think there's experts in the room, but I think it's for the level of poverty.
It's based on.
Sorry, I
different.
Just, I was just curious.
It's based on qualification for free lunch.
Yep.
Free lunch.
Oh, okay.
But you know the
I was like, oh, you should. Commissioner Logan here. What's wrong?
I know some of the other titles well, but not that one. Okay, thank you.
So I have a question. So the chargers that will be funding, these chargers really just for those organizations, or will they be chargers that will someone be available to the public?
It's both. Okay. It's both. Yeah, that's quite a variety in what was requested. So we're seeing both. We're seeing fast chargers and regular chargers. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate you guys doing all the hard work to capture this funds for the people. So thank you.
Thank you, Dan, for the time.
Yeah. Great job, Lisa and Shelley. On break.
Okay. It is 9:56. Let's take a 9-minute break. But come back.
It is 10:05. And we are back. And for next break.
All right, next up, 2026 and 2027 insurance renewal in our own entire firm. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Morning.
Thank you, John. Good morning, commissioners.
Well, I will say it's 10:05, Commissioner Alphorn Crowe.
Hi, Reformer, Manager of Risk Management here at the District. So, Commissions, I'm here to give you a refresher on the insurance program, give you an update on the insurance market, and then share with you the estimated premium for the upcoming policy term. So, as a reminder, EL7 does require that we maintain the coverage listed there, so liability, property, vehicle, crime, and cyber. But you'll see our insurance program here in a few slides that you'll see that we maintain more than that based on our operations. Moved ahead here. So here's our agenda for this morning. I'm going to jump right in, starting with our insurance renewal process. So this is a 6-month process that typically kicks off in January. We had a little bit of a condensed timeline this year because we onboarded a new broker. So that took place in January this year. And I'll talk about that RFP here shortly. We started with our renewal strategy meeting in February, and then we moved into the application phase. And that's where all the teams you see listed across the bottom come into play. They are super key for this part of the process. And so my team were responsible for reaching out to each of these groups to complete the applications. And I say this each year, but just the subject matter expertise and the responsiveness just makes the process very efficient and timely. And timeliness is really important with this process because the sooner we can get the data over to the broker, the longer they have to be able to negotiate on our behalf. Then once we move past the application phase, our broker approaches the markets and we receive preliminary estimates, which you'll see here today. But our broker does continue to negotiate up until the policy term expires. And this is just a refresher on what our current insurance structure looks like. So each tower or block is its own policy and or coverage. So I won't go through the entire structure, but essentially each block will show you how many limits we have for each coverage, and then you can see the corresponding deductible or SIR across the bottom.
I have a question. So EL7 is a board policy.
It is.
Those limitations, those amounts, are those consistent with staff believes they should be?
So that's a good point. So that's something we're actually going to be reevaluating in the next upcoming policy terms. So we have what we are considering a study to determine if the reserves we have are appropriate, and if not, what they should be. But along with that study, they're also going to establish whether or not our limits are appropriate. So if we find through that exercise that they maybe these requirements are outdated, we would be looking to get these updated. A long time, yeah.
Thank you for that question.
Thank you. Okay, so moving into the insurance market landscape. So this is something we talk about each year, and it's the idea that despite the district having a positive loss history, we do have to keep in mind and we bear some of the consequence of what else is happening out there in the market. As you know, natural catastrophes are still an issue. Wildfire risk is on the rise, and attacks on U.S. critical infrastructure is also on the rise. And this is something we like to show you each year, just so you have an idea of what is happening out there in the country as far as losses. So in 2025, we saw 23 natural disasters that exceeded $1 billion, a total aggregate of $115 billion. And you can see in the chart here, this is actually an improvement from 2024, where we saw 27 natural disasters and about $185 billion aggregate. So slight improvement, and you'll see that reflected in the property premium here shortly.
That's nationwide.
And so this next slide is the same data, but we like to show you where these losses happen across the country.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are some aspects of the renewal strategy that we had going into this policy term. I won't go through each of these, but there's a few that I wanted to highlight for you, the first being the broker RFP. And so we, if you recall last year when we were in front of you, our five-year broker contract was set to expire at the end of the year, so we conducted an RFP the second half of the year. We had five respondents, and ultimately, after evaluation, Marsh was selected as our broker. Marsh is one of the largest brokers, the largest broker in the world, and they're one of the largest broker aggregators of energy and renewable and energy and power data, which is really important when it comes to benchmarking. So it's a very solid team. We're excited to be working with them, and we're confident they can take the program to the next level. And then captive expiration. So this should sound familiar. Captives are something we've been exploring for the last year or so. So we continued those conversations, and we included in our budget for 2026 a captive feasibility study. And so that was approved. And so now that we've moved through the renewal, we'll be focusing on the captive feasibility study in the second half of the year. And so what that study will tell us is they'll formally explain whether or not a captive is feasible. And if it is feasible, what would that look like for the PUD? And then the PERM's Aegis Wildfire Pool, this was an interesting exercise. There were about 22 PUDs involved. And so these were discussions to determine if we could pool together premium in exchange for a shared wildfire liability limit from Aegis. Ultimately, we couldn't come up with a premium allocation. Essentially, Aegis couldn't come up with a premium allocation that made sense based on the individual PUD risk profiles. So essentially, you had two PUDs with different risk profiles paying the same premium. So right now, it doesn't make economic sense, and the conversations have ended, but we do think it's something that will come up in the future. And it could make sense if they come up with a more sophisticated model for the premium allocation where it makes sense on individual profiles.
I'm just curious, sorry, the 22 PUD ball that you mentioned, what PUDs? They're located in
Washington State. Yes, I should have made that clear.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah.
And then just digging a little bit more into property liability and cyber, just high level reminder of our program. We have a $400 million limit with a $1 million SIR. The property market is softening, but again, natural catastrophes are an issue. We did a full remarket this year in the US and the UK and approached about 15 plus insurers. And that also included an underwriter presentation where we presented about the PUD to those different insurers so that they could then come back with a quote, a premium quote on our program.
Mine looks though like there might be a positive note here.
There might be a positive note, yes. So our loss history, as usual, remains positive, which is great. We just have to keep in mind what else might be happening out there.
Yeah, it's frustrating that we're caught up in a market. Tornadoes have been hurricanes in other parts of the country in the last several years.
It has, and it just has a huge impact on the carrier's portfolio and what they're able to charge their clients. Yeah. The liability, just a reminder, we have a $50 million limit with a $2 million retention. I'm sure this is no surprise, but the excess liability market is still being impacted by social inflation and rising claim severity. Despite that, our loss history does remain positive. And we'll be looking at a 10% increase year over year for our excess liability premium, which is an improvement from 20% increase year over year last year. And then cyber, we have, if you recall, we increased our limits to $10 million last year after we conducted a benchmarking exercise. And then we have our $1 million SIR, or self-insured retention. The market is competitive, but still being impacted by AI-driven risks and ransomware. We're looking at positive loss history as far as the PD is concerned. We did this year conduct a very extensive cyber risk assessment at the recommendation of our broker and at no additional charge. So shout out to Kevin Johnston and Becky Burden, who took the time to complete that, and we were able to receive some immediate feedback on our program, which is generally we have a great solid program, but there's just some ways that we can fine tune. And so we received that feedback from Marsh. And at last, here are the estimated premiums for the upcoming policy term. We're looking at about $5.2 million this year, which is a 6% increase year over year. And we want to share some aspects of what our strategy will be going into the following policy term. So as I mentioned, we'll be completing that captive feasibility study to determine if it makes sense for the PUD. We'll be conducting in-person appraisals for large assets to refine our statement of values. We're going to continue the underwriter engagement I mentioned. So really what those are in-person or virtual meetings when we meet with the insurance underwriters to talk about the PUD, what initiatives we have going, what our mitigation efforts are, just so they have a bigger picture on what our risk profile is to make sure we're getting optimal pricing. And then we'll be using loss control credits through Aegis. They have some great programs where if you can show some mitigation projects, they will actually reimburse you certain dollars for those projects. Mm-hmm. Yes. So cybersecurity, if you can prove that you have a ongoing cybersecurity mitigation project, they'll reimburse you $50,000.
I have a question regarding the cybersecurity. Do you think the policies or the liability insurance or the policies, they're going to stay in the same place, or they are going to change or modify something because cybersecurity is risk, but we always look at it for the safety and protect everything, right? So with all the things that happens right now at the world and everything, so I'm just curious if they policies, they're going to be the same, or they're going to adapt or readapt something different to protect for the future and future years.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So there's actually a product the market is meeting us where we are, and the cyber insurance landscape has significantly changed. And so the insurance carrier actually have rolled out a new feature of their coverage. It's more enhanced coverage for what our policy doesn't currently cover. And so I have some notes here, but Aegis is offering an enhanced cyber coverage for incidents that are a result of acts of war. So something that, again, we don't currently have coverage for. Because cyber attacks have become more sophisticated and persistent, insurers are updating coverage to address those higher impact losses that you're referring to. So it's built for the energy and power sector only at this time, just because the risks are on the rise. They are offering this at a very reasonable price considering what the risks could be, and we would prefer to have this coverage in place than for a potential loss to be passed on to the ratepayers. So that's a very timely question.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. All right, so from here, I'm gonna be returning again. Our brokers will continue to negotiate the premium, but I'll be back on May 26th with the near final premium and requesting your authorization to buy coverage at that time.
I remember last year we did this briefing, the price came down a little bit.
It did. I mean, usually they
no pressure.
No pressure. Yeah, no pressure. Yes. Our best.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Kyra. Great job.
Anything else, John?
Yeah, should do it. Good presentation.
Okay. Next, item five, our CEO General Manager report. Do you have a report today, Bill?
Yeah, a couple items there. First, Kudos to Edmonds College for successfully saving over 500,000 kilowatt hours, equating to nearly 41,000 in annual energy savings, and for receiving the most engaged executive sponsor award from the PUD's Commercial Strategic Energy Management Program. The special award exemplifies the leadership that Chris Zurek had demonstrated. And thank you to Commissioner Logan for helping to recognize this accomplishment last week. From HR, May is wellness, May's wellness destination, mental health and mindful breathing. Starting Wednesday, May 6th, joining Team PUD for a three-week wellness journey challenge focused on mental well-being through a simple, powerful practice, which is mindful breathing. Customer and Energy Services on April 28th, our key accounts team held the first in-person customer networking breakfast since COVID, enabling valuable engagement with our largest customers. The program featured a summary of last year's energy efficiency partnerships and future opportunities for conservation. So it's great to see that we're bringing those back in person on occasion. And then our generation group, Generation Engineering and Operations, successfully worked together with a contractor to extract the Unit 1 power nozzles from the Jackson Powerhouse. Work started on Friday, and all the nozzles were removed by midday yesterday. The nozzles are the valves that regulate the flow of water that sprays on the Pelton and spins the turbine. The generator then converts that mechanical energy to electrical energy. The nozzles haven't been removed since the project was built in 1984. Nozzles have been transported to Everett Engineering, where they will be rebuilt with the new seals and gaskets. And I had the opportunity on Friday to go out and go down into the cave where they're taking these, they're massive needles. I was going to try to get out over the weekend. It didn't happen to see them actually moving those things out of there. But yeah, pretty impressive. The steels eventually start to leak, and that's really what we had, a little bit of an oil leak last year. We contained that and had been working for this removal and rebuild since then. That's all. Happy to answer any questions.
I have no questions, but I did make it out this morning that I wanted to recognize Municipal Clerks Week, and I have been a proponent of this for many years on the board, a few years back, it's been quite a while, stated that they wanted their clerks to achieve this certification, and I think it's actually in the job descriptions at the time. Not as a requirement. Anyway, this is a multi-year program. The association covers the United States and is in countries around the world. And there are very few that achieve the certification, the top level certification. I don't have the number in front of me, but I know last year I did look it up and it was just a little over 1,000, right? That may have, well, it's very few, you know, the number of municipal clerks that you have in the United States. Boards all have municipal clerks, whether they be city, PD. So those achievements are pretty special. And I'm very proud that all of our clerks are working toward or have achieved the top level certification. And that helps them be perfect in their support of their elected officials, which is sometimes can be challenging. Anyway, thank you very much.
So I would just, I file on to Commissioner Olson's and say congratulations to our clerks, Morgan Fultner, Jenny Rich, and Allison Morrison for the work that they do, keeping you all out of trouble, keeping me out of trouble as well.
That's it.
Probably a heavy trouble. Yeah, you do a fantastic job. We're lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Item 6, item for individuals' consideration, 6A, consideration of a resolution designated an authorized representative and alternative for
coordinating matters relating to district requests for certain disaster assistance funds from appropriate federal and state agencies for the December 5th through 19th, 2025 severe storm, straight line wind, flooding, landslide, and mudslide event. I'll call for a motion.
I'm
okay. Leslie Ma available to answer any questions regarding the resolution? Questions or comments?
I have none.
Briefed on this. I pass off to whoever come up with the title of that. All right. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next, 6B, consideration of a resolution authorizing the letter of agreement between Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local Number 77, regarding meter reading, retention, career development, and training. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
And a moment is available to answer any questions. Liz, do you have any questions, please?
I have none. Then we have all the information.
Thank you. Perfect. Okay, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next, 6B, consideration of a resolution approving amendment number 4 to the collective bargain agreement between Public Utilities District Number 1 of Snohomish County and the International Brotherhood of Electric Workers Number 77 for the period of April 1st, 2024 through March 31st, 2028. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
And everyone is still available to answer questions. Are there any questions or comments?
I have no questions.
No questions.
Now I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next is item 7, commission business. First is 7A commission reports. Do you have any reports, Jennifer?
I have none.
Well, we did cover the block.
That was fun. There's a lot of people so happy to see families and with the children happy with the hats and everything. So it was a beautiful day. So
yeah. I was impressed at how many customers they had came and went in the theater. A really compelling conversation about their hydrogen, all things Leon. It's fascinating, very engaged with.
And for the water presentation. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, just kids, but kids were well. I have no reports. We checked with Edmonds and very attentive crowd. It was good.
Nice.
Yeah. Next is 7B, our commission events calendar. Any changes to the events calendar? This is on page 162 of our packet. Not any changes, I'm going to PPC. I'm doing PPC remotely.
Okay, yeah, it's going to be an interesting meeting. Are you doing remote or are you going to
have? I am going to attend.
Okay.
Okay.
So for May 15, we have a day to visit the hydro.
Yes, that's in the governance.
Okay.
So next, we'll move to 7C, our district dashboard. Begins on page 170 of our packet. Questions, comments about the dashboard?
Okay, now I just got there.
Well, I don't know if it's that time to talk about it, but can we, it says in the calendar, the event calendar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I would like to see if it's possible to attend the WEI Women in Energy Symposium.
in California in November 3rd to 5th. And I am asking for your support to participate in this professional development opportunity. So this is my second year, and I like to get myself as much as I can in order to serve.
I strongly support you attending. I have done a couple of those, and when it was in its infancy, and it's one of the better seminars or whatever you want to call it that I attended. They really bring in some high-powered women in business as their main speakers. So I support it.
Nice group.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So anything on our district dashboard? I think there's no questions. Okay. So next we'll move to 7D, our financial status report for the first quarter. Page 173. This isn't the presentation, right? Question.
What? I have no questions. I read it someplace, but I don't want to have a question. I can't recall what.
Then next we'll move to item 8, our governance planning calendar. This is on page 199. Our packet. Are there any questions or changes to the governance planning calendar? Add a third, our large load principles.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else?
Oh, I see on June 9th, we're going to be talking about, it's been added decorative wraps on district equipment. I look forward to that presentation. I'm going to be coming for bear.
They're beautiful.
They're not on Amazon.
All right. Well, is there any further business to come before the board today? Seeing and hearing none, it is now 10:31, and our meeting is adjourned.